baby. You're blind from the facts on who you are because you're watching that garbage.
This is Eli.
This is Esme.
This is Everett.
We're from Maryville.
This is Ethel. I'm from Iowa.
You're listening to WGSC. 90.7 FM.
Guam, Catskill, Hudson.
Creative Community Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles. And if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jack Schoonover of Los Angeles, California. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
This is Ken Stringfellow of the Posies, Big Star, etc., and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Cap District, what's going on? It's your main man, DJ Ketchup, and I'm here to let you know. Coming to Hudson Hall Saturday, February 8th, is Hudson's biggest night of fashion. It's the second annual Forever Young Fashion Show, and it's featuring 7-plus local designers, boutiques, 50-plus models, dance performances, DJs, pop-up shops, and more. This is all presented by Stitch, making fashion matter. All to benefit the Greater Hudson Promise neighborhood, sponsored by Columbia Memorial Health and Kohl's. All produced by Hudson's own Mel Mayus. Tickets are on sale now at StitchedNY.com. That is StitchedNY.com. We totally catch up.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Waldholtz of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, the local hangout of the airwaves. Greene and Columbia counties.
Chesty, I'm muted, everybody. That's me. I wish.
Everybody.
Yeah, I wish.
You brought on yourself, honestly.
Hello.
It's hard to hear yourself. Hello, and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the two-story fountain in the vestibule of the Catskill Maker Syndicate, located at 65 West Bridge Street, here in the heart of Catskill. There's a delay, there's a delay. And sorry, folks, but we're down a couple of members today, and we're figuring out a couple of technical glitches.
Okay, Corey's a little panicky, sorry.
It's all good. We're just missing a sound engineer.
Okay. All right. Anyway, if anybody was still wondering where we're coming from, it is 65 West Bridge Street in the heart of Catskill, also known as that weird place right next to the Juice Branch. We are here to answer any science or technology-related questions you may have. Contact us at the Catskill Makers info at gmail.com or directly at www.thingularity.tech. That is, and this is the only time I'm saying this, folks, thingularity.tech. And now, tonight's members and guests, please sound off.
Why is it always left to right? Why can't it be right to left?
Pass the duchy on the left-hand side.
Cody, hello.
Yes, I'm Opie, and it's a pleasure to be here.
This is Corey.
A lot of ease.
This is Ben.
Good solid name, Ben. And this is Mr. Conductor talking to everybody. All right, and here it is. This is the, what is it, February now?
February 6th.
February broadcast edition of Thingularity. Unfortunately, a couple of our people are down. We have Professor Von Mothersbaugh listening from home. Hopefully she's going to feel better and be back around for the next show. We have Brian X, the Cat Wrangler, out doing ambassadorial tasks, meeting and greeting other makerspaces across the country. Hopefully when he comes back, he'll be on the next show and let you guys know some of his adventures.
And Albert Flores will be in momentarily.
We got another guy coming. He should be on the way. And if Brian's listening out there, hope everything is safe and good. Take lots of pictures and take notes. Bring them back and give us lots of content.
That's right.
Anybody got any new projects they've been working on lately?
Say, you see that CNC router behind us?
What's a CNC router?
Okay. It takes an XYZ table, so it moves in three different directions, and it moves a very fast-spinning bit to cut away material into a shape that you want it to be.
Sounds like a router on a robotic arm.
That's right.
Awesome. So this thing could cut different pieces of material based on code that's fed to it?
Yeah, it uses Linux CNC.
This particular device?
Yeah, this particular device. And
what's special about that?
Well, I mean, it's free software, man. You can run any CNC that you happen to go and get secondhand.
Oh, so you're saying that you loaded the software onto this CNC router?
Well, it really doesn't need software. It needs a computer. You load it onto a computer, and then you connect it to the CNC router.
Okay,
and there's
so the
separate drivers
of the device
that amplify the signals from a printer port.
A printer port?
Yeah.
So it's
that
like
thing that you work with all the time?
Well, printer ports come in many different kinds.
DB25, 25-pin parallel connector.
Okay, a parallel LPT port, yeah, that a lot of people would see on their listed on their computer.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Those things are old school, and nobody has them anymore.
Business computers have them.
Really?
Well, not the ones you brought in.
Exactly. Yeah, well, most business computers are small form factor things that are supposed to fit on someone's desk under a monitor.
Yeah, you want to know the problem that I figured out was? I'm embarrassed to say this on air.
Okay, go ahead.
It was just making vibrating noises, but...
Do tell.
The reason was that it was the windings of the motors were wired backwards.
Wait, what? The motors themselves were wired in reverse. You weren't just feeding them a reverse polarity.
That's right. I wired them backwards. It was my mistake.
Ah.
I just switched the locations of two sets of wires.
And it's all battery stopped shaking.
Yeah, it just moved like butter.
So, because... basically, the motors were moving in the right direction, even though you were feeding them the reversed polarity.
Well, they weren't...
Beforehand.
They were obeying my commands.
Did you have to alter your commands at all to get them to work like this?
To vibrate?
No, once you switched the polarity,
no,
did you change... Really?
Yeah, no.
Okay, then I seem to have a severe lack of understanding of this device. So we're going to move on to another person that just wandered in off the street.
Oh,
say hello.
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
What's your name?
I'm Albert.
Oh, that's you. Great.
Yeah, it is me.
How you doing?
He's our resident mathematician. If you have a math question, just ask him. And don't ask him trig, because that's a horrible waste of his mind.
I can do some trig.
So if you have any calculus or trigonometry questions, send them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com.
Just make sure it's
logic questions, actually.
Just make sure it's in the complex plane, right?
It doesn't have to be... I'm not necessarily concerned about numerical complexity. I like more abstract and the logic side, writing proofs and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got any new projects you've been working on?
Not new, but we're currently applying for another grant for our NASA project, which I've spoken about before.
Money's great.
On this show, yeah. That's due next Wednesday, so we're cranking out the budget and stuff.
Have all the documents necessary for the proposal been written out?
Not quite. Still have to finish the budget, and it's 80% done. Plenty of time to finish.
Grant writing.
But it is
an enthralling subject.
A press, yeah, it is a press.
I guess I'm just asking if Tom's done with his diagrams and all the fancy stuff that...
No, hopefully
obviously gets used to sell it.
Next week, yeah. Well, that thing, that I think is done, and hopefully
perfect.
Next week we'll have some...
I'm glad to hear it.
Some diagrams for our holographic telecentric camera.
Ooh.
Our 3D mouse, but... which I've been printing parts for here. The little box I've been printing stuff for.
Got to make it all from scratch. Back in the day, just make it out of wood.
Yeah, we had wooden boxes, but they didn't quite work. You know, we're constrained to the wooden box, but with a 3D printer, we can make it
any way you want.
Exactly how we need it to be.
Yeah, one of the big differences, because we were just talking about the CNC router that is behind Cody over there.
Yeah.
The CNC router is subtractive. It takes a medium and then just removes things from it to create the output product.
They call it stock.
3D printing's the opposite. It creates it from the elements piece by piece, so there's a lot less waste.
Yeah. You just squeeze out some really hot filament at a quarter of a millimeter thick.
It's additive manufacturing.
Right, you just add material.
Yeah. Sexy.
It's a hot snot gun, a very accurate one.
They make them. They make them into pens too. You can get a 3D pen. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, the things it comes up with are really ugly.
Oh yeah, unless you put it in the hand of an actual artist that knows what they're doing.
Well, about 15 or 16 years ago or so, when I was still living back home and doing mechanic work, my
home,
stepdad had a business fixing
home
tractors.
Being the Central Valley of California.
Yeah, back in California. Yeah, I'm from California.
We won't hold it against you.
Yeah, all right. Somebody bought, one of the guys in the company bought a plastic welder, which was super cool concept, but it really was sort of janky the way it works. But it was kind of like a pen 3D printer
really?
In a way. But you held more like a soldering gun kind of handle. And the filament was pretty thick, like eighth inch or something like that. 16
that would come out or go in?
Well, you're putting kind of like thin glue sticks into it.
Cool.
And you could like fix plastic parts, you know, like where it cracked, you just kind of melt it back together.
Would that actually bond plastic? Because that's pretty hard to do.
Welding. They call it friction welding. You could do it with metal, too.
It didn't work very well, but the concept seemed interesting. I mean, it was...
I know for actual plastic welding, you need, like, powders and bonding agents and stuff like that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I don't actually know anything about plastic welding, but this was kind of just supposed to be, oh, anybody could do this if you want to buy this device.
I just break out the hot glue gun. It usually gets the job done. All right. Anything else going on, guys?
Yeah. Anybody else got any projects? How about you, Opie? Anything?
Does a girlfriend count?
I don't think so. Probably not something you want to talk about on air.
Unless it's some sort of problem-solving issue we can roll through.
Can we do a troubleshooting session? I don't think so.
I'd have to invite her.
Yeah.
We could try couples counseling on the next edition of Thingularity.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, one of our favorite topics, Elon Musk, is back in the news, bothering, I'm monitoring my language here, other and more astronomers. I read recently that there were astronomers in Scotland monitoring, and you probably have heard me complain about this on the Better Weather, there were Scottish astronomers monitoring meteor activity. And what they normally do is they take a radar beacon that is coming from a central station, which is usually either for defense purposes or for locating ships and airplanes. And when they bounce radio waves out into the atmosphere, a lot of astronomers, amateurs to professionals, will sit there with different types of antennas that can catch the radar signals bouncing off of incoming meteors. And they'll just sit on hilltops and such nearby, and they can actually capture echoes from the meteors passing overhead. Sometimes they can use sophisticated equipment and turn this echo signature into a nice picture, showing you the meteors entering the area. Well, some pictures that I saw taken recently were showing lots and lots of streaks going through the field of view, and that was Elon Musk's Starlink going through. I think these ones were still low orbit, rising to their I guess, functional orbit, but right. I don't...
Yeah, it might become an unfortunate reality that most observational astronomy is going to be done from space. I mean, we've almost reached the point where even the largest ground-based telescopes that we have still can't acquire the kind of resolution that the atmosphere would even... limit, right?
You're talking about optical telescopes, right?
Sure. And radio telescopes and things like that don't quite suffer the same.
But that's where it's at. Astronomy amateurs are really into the pictures, into the visualization. There isn't really too much new data to be gained from that.
Correct.
But so if we're going to be academically searching for new things, large radar telescope arrays even on the ground are still going to be viable, do you think?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, those are we can get to, we can upgrade, and we can basically futz with a lot easier than anything in orbit. And if we have a big constellation of satellites around us, that's going to really start limiting us. And it's not just Starlink. There are other companies out there. I'm seeing here that there's a OneWeb company that has been launching satellites since before Starlink even got off the ground. Fortunately, the OneWeb satellites are a whole section higher than Starlink. They shouldn't be getting in anybody's way. We have thousands of satellites surrounding the planet right now, and the astronomers haven't been getting this angry until now. There's got to be a way to fix
Starlink. Maybe I don't understand enough about Starlink, but is it not geostationary orbits then? Are they actually...
No. They're designed to decay.
Okay. So they'll fall out of orbit and...
Okay, if... To try to picture the Starlink satellites' orbits around the planet, they're all – it's kind of like a giant choreographed beehive. There are a lot of satellites all over the place constantly moving. They're moving in kind of a spiral pattern around the planet, spinning around themselves, but none of their orbits actually touching.
Okay.
So they don't need to be geostationary because you'll have two or three flying overhead at all times.
Right. It's kind of like a giant mesh network or something.
Exactly.
And you'll get better latency that way, I guess, because it's much closer to the surface.
Yes. That's the big deal.
Lower latency.
It's close to the surface, which is why it's angering all the astronomers, which are trying to see stuff. Because it's so close, it takes up so much of your field of view. But we're going to get, what, discount internet access?
Yeah. I feel for the amateur astronomers. The only saving grace, I think, is that their orbits are so low that they'll decay in, what is it, 7 years?
If they're not boosted.
7 to 10 years.
If they're not routinely boosted, right?
Yeah, I mean, once they lose power, I think it's 5 to 7 years, so crash back to Earth.
Well, that's better than all the other satellites up there that basically just get parked into an orbit and left there forever.
Yeah, become space junk. Flying around.
That one day our space force is going to be having to clean up. That's going to be like their first task.
I think I have heard, I can't remember the name right now, but I think there is a company looking into doing some early, like, you know, space junk cleaning, you know, trying to get some of those out of the way.
I'm curious if there's some sort of NASA contract for that. Like, how would that be profitable?
Dude, it's space garbage men. How are space garbage men profitable? How are Earth garbage men profitable?
What about the Great Garbage Patch?
Yeah, what about the Great Garbage Patch?
Well, ocean garbage is a big topic, and that's a lot of people trying to tackle that, though.
Oh, yeah, it's real fun. It's a fun and friendly topic.
Latest Doctor Who episode was about it.
Seriously? Oh, so it's got to be serious then.
But I'll bet there are a lot of precious metals and also just iron and other recoverable metals in space junk that would be worth collecting if it could be done efficiently.
Jill just passed on it. They're having robots go in to do it. So, yeah, I guess that's what the startup is looking into doing.
It costs $10,000 just to put something into orbit per pound. So if you have, say, a 100-pound satellite, what's 10 times 100? That's a lot of money. Going around just to collect garbage. And then, all right, assuming you can take the precious metals back, I still don't see it paying itself off, even if you can get them back to the Earth's surface cheaply.
Without it burning up and dispersing in the atmosphere?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Maybe the model will be more insurance, you know, improving your insurance premium. There must be some kind of...
We're going to start taxing SpaceX.
You see, you were talking.
No, everybody laughs, but no, that's what's going to happen.
Taking out junk lowers liability.
Albert, you were talking about how we ought to be moving to a system of economics that's less focused on what is valued externally versus what your actual personal worth is.
Stone Age bartering.
Stone Age bartering. No, but it could be more sophisticated.
Maybe that model won't even apply anymore by the time that's even being done.
Are you guys trying to redesign economics? What are you doing over there?
What's that? Zion economics?
Is that what happens at the Catskill Maker Syndicate? redesign no. economics?
Oh, redesign.
It's more than supply and demand.
No, not redesign. I just think, you know, we're seeing, and this is relevant to tech, that many things are becoming automated. There's a lot more. Some of the more of the mundane tasks and sort of physical labor is becoming less relevant in our society.
All the McDonald's workers are being replaced with robots?
Well, a lot of fast food has you walk in and type in your order,
think
I guess,
any
now.
Job.
I don't go to fast food a lot, but
yes,
I
yes, and that's how they
that
spread the flu so quickly, by the way.
But people will, you know, you can't have a society that exists where nobody has jobs. So... It just the jobs will transition to service or something else. I don't know.
H.G. Wells' Time Machine didn't. Well, actually, yeah, they did have jobs. It was called the Morlocks.
Oh. Yeah, they call the local native population, right?
The Morlocks? I'm sorry?
Weren't they calling the local native population?
Oh, yeah, the Morlocks lived underground. And
I remember that movie.
They ate basically the white people of that time.
Soylent Green.
There you go. The future's now.
That's the short-term solution.
That's the solution for overpopulation right there.
And real estate.
And real estate.
Marry people.
Excellent. That's how you. It's a good way to make more land.
Is there a way to make pollution edible? That yeah.
Pollution edible?
Yeah. Oh, pollution is absolutely edible. You just don't last too long on it.
Make the robots eat the pollution.
Hmm. Let's see. There's a lot of there's some power stored in some of those chemicals. We could have robots running off of a fuel cell that might be based off of some sort of catalytic reaction. What do you think? I know they've actually designed robots that were meant to consume biological material. They basically they haven't been released into the environment yet, but these have been designed to gather organic material into themselves and either biodigest it with chemicals releasing electron loads or just flat out burning it and using it to through piezoelectric generators make power from local materials.
Anything can be assimilated.
There you go.
Exactly. So one day
anything can be assimilated, and that's true.
So we take those little assimilation pods, we tack them onto the Boston Dynamics big dogs that have been roaming around, and basically you have little Skynets running around that can eat people. But why? They'll probably just start with your pets.
Wait, hold on. We started with pollution. Why are people not pollution?
People are pollution.
Goo.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The Matrix.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in The Matrix, they actually used them as a resource. They weren't pollution. They were batteries, which is kind of dumb to me.
Which is not going to happen.
It was originally supposed to be processors, but the studio thought that the audience was too dumb to understand that, so it became batteries.
That makes a million times more sense.
Seriously.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Take them, like, one of the most parallel computing mechanisms in the universe, mm-hmm. and...
So I'm hoping the revival, next one will maybe add that back
next
in.
Next one, what are you talking about?
Part four.
Yeah, they're making a fourth
they're
one.
Filming it
they're trying to fix it all. So you're saying in 1999, they thought people had no idea what a computer's going to do, even though Y2K is bearing down on them, but they'll understand a Duracell?
I know. It's Hollywood execs.
Great. Okay.
To be fair, you don't work for an ISP, so.
Oh, my God.
Well, I remember somebody from MST3K saying that Hollywood execs were surprised they actually knew what was going on with the O.J. Simpson trial. They thought it was only known about in L.A., the thing that was dominating the airwaves, that killed soap operas and, introduced reality TV, It's like, the flyover country thing.
Anyway, I'll tell you what, go read the main book that inspired The Matrix, or I should say, the writers of The Matrix.
Peter Rabbit?
Simulacrum and Simulation by Jean Baudrillard.
What happens in this this foreign tale?
Just go read it. I'm not going to explain it right now.
Well, there's also a comic book, The Invisibles, by Grant Morrison, which also bears a lot of heavy similarity to it and predates it by like 4 or 5 years.
Two entries in the Thingularity Book Club. Okay, anything else going on in the news that anybody wants to talk about? Anything bothering you? Because a lot of things aren't making people happy these days.
I'll tell you what was bothering me.
Is it the bio break? Because we're not
ready
for it. Is it
election apps?
It's not.
Voting apps?
Oh, okay.
Please, go ahead.
No. We're going to save that. We're going to talk about that after the break.
Oh, okay.
No problem. What were you going to say, Cody? Sorry to interrupt you there.
There's a new ransomware going around.
Good tie-in.
Industrial vendors, look at your stuff. Please, look at your code. Realize it's bad. Continue improving it. Because it doesn't just encrypt data, but it's targeting your systems.
Oh, you're talking about the ECANs.
Ekans? Ekans is how it's pronounced in
the
Pokemon.
We all read, we are nerds, we read our words before we hear other people pronounce them.
Yeah, Ekans is a Pokemon, but it's also a ransomware that directly targets various industrial controllers.
Where will you find an industrial control system?
An industrial control system is going to be found in a dam, like a hydroelectric dam. Where else?
Nuclear power facilities?
Yeah.
Anywhere transfer stations for the electric grid?
Yeah, exactly.
All kinds of manufacturing, assembly lines, any sort of automated
factories, yep, chip factories. Makers, global foundries, you name it. All these people are using industrial control systems. So the ransomware that has been spreading around the world, crippling cities left and right, is now designed to attack all these pieces of infrastructure.
Well, I mean, it does something that's fairly, I guess I shouldn't say fairly innocuous, but it does something kind of silly. It just kills the processes that control them on the computer. Which is
oh,
like,
that's right.
Generally, you'll have a service that just is checking always and, that restarts the
and
process.
And that's like a self-defense mechanism, right?
I don't know.
I believe
well, hopefully critical systems will fail safe. We can hope.
Well, what happened
if they fail badly, kind of like Fukushima Daiichi?
That failed because a tsunami smacked into it.
And
yeah, but who puts a nuclear power plant on the coast when it's going to get hit by a wave eventually?
A lot of people. Pilgrim over in Massachusetts and then
Indian Point.
In,
they need the water.
Brace yourselves. Brace yourselves.
Brace yourselves. Those light water reactors and pressurized water reactors.
Yeah, all the nuclear reactors need to be located near a large body of water for active cooling. And you know what? You put a little money into that, a little bit of research, those nuclear reactors will be just fine. Don't put them where they're prone to be weakened by a tsunami, earthquake, or stupid Russians.
Yeah, not only is God himself going to be against you with nature, it's going to be the software engineers who want to ruin your stuff.
Or Putin.
The subcontract.
All roads lead to Putin.
But hey, in a couple decades, you'll get a miniseries on HBO.
And then everything is going to work out fine. So I guess that's the latest in the ransomware world. No new viruses or any other exploits happening that we know of.
Every day. What are you talking about? Just check MITRE.
No. It's all good. Norton's got my back, right?
Nobody wants to talk about the Windows 10 fail.
Oh, what's the Windows 10 fail? Please tell.
Windows 10 failed because when you hit the little search bar... So you have a little, spyglass.
You mean where it actually searches the internet for things, too?
Yeah, so it searches for things for the internet, not only on your computer. So, like, when you wanted to go fire up, Microsoft Word, and you're too lazy to go find it in the little start menu, you could type it in, just Word, and bang, you're just right there.
It is convenient.
And then, so what ended up happening is they threw the blame at a fiber provider.
What?
Feet, yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, it was a third-party fiber provider that caused this whole big snafu. And it's like, well, why do I need to have a third-party provider working to search my local machine to find Word? I mean, it was a little silly. None of you guys had that problem?
They were including a fiber provider.
We don't use Windows on a regular basis. We actually like ourselves.
This is true. I have to do that for work, but
you have our sympathy and our complete understanding.
Yeah, and I think even when I was still using Windows, I'd actually go into the trouble of going to the web browser and using search. So
what you're saying is there was a local search for searching for files on the local machine. It would somehow involve this third party application.
Yeah. So like right next to the start button, there's this nice little spyglass. You're like, all right, so I'm kind of lazy. I want to go search for something real fast, or I want to go execute something quick because I know exactly what it's called. And you couldn't work it. And it basically died because it lost connectivity to their servers. And it's like, well, this is kind of crap.
What would it be sending to their servers if you're only searching a local file on a local hard drive?
Yeah, is it
God
snarfing
up
your Windows
What index? Company was this related to?
Microsoft.
No, what was the third party?
Yeah, the third party fiber.
I don't know who they threw it at, but I'll throw First Light under the bus because I hate them. But
oh, nice.
So is everybody else. It's fair enough.
Love it.
So we'll just throw them under the bus.
Just like all their customers. Tossed under the bus. Okay, folks, you're listening to the Thingularity Radio program. And if you have any questions for any of our guests tonight, you can send them to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com.
Greetings of our evil overlords at the FCC. You are listening to WGXE 90.7 FM Akron, radio for open ears.
Driving on the freeway in the fast lane with
Coming at you, everybody, like always, on the Thingularity Radio Program. I would just like to keep... Hey, what are you doing with my paperwork?
It's fine. I'm just checking to see if we're unmuted.
Oh, hopefully everybody can hear me. All right, we have some topics here that anybody can ask us on. Charging, discharging, leaks, plugs, data destruction, data reconstruction, motors, from Wi-Fi to welding to waffles, from asteroids to Zener diodes. Just ask us here. Please keep in mind that if you are listening outside of our normal live broadcast, which is 7 to 8 p.m. first Thursday of every month, you can send your questions to either of our contact points at any time convenient to you, and we will happily answer you on the next episode. Once again, the contact info is catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com, and you can reach us at www.thingularity.tech. However, we cannot reach back. Okay. Latest in the news, we have the failure of the app at the Iowa caucus for the...
We should not be using the internet to vote.
Don't be using the internet? Why? What's wrong? I do my banking online?
Yeah, that's probably a bad thing, too.
The thing was not secure at all.
What was that? I can't hear anybody. Somebody's mumbling in the background.
The app itself was not secure. It was tested. It was very easy to get into it and change the results directly.
And they ran ahead and used it because cheaper?
No, this is actually... We wanted to avoid getting into the political issue, but it is entirely a political issue. It was made by former Hillary staffers, and it was in part funded by Pete Buttigieg.
Okay, and this is relevant because, what, they just chose idiots to code?
They chose to go with a supplier that had connections to Democrats, and it was a Democratic caucus. So
okay.
It just looks a little corrupt. You're picking bad technology that also is strongly linked to... important figures within the Democratic
Party.
That
could easily be manipulated.
Okay, so you could dial that back to old school politics of my brother's got something to sell, so let's include him in on it, even though he's selling stuff that's going to fall apart.
Well, isn't the software that this stuff is built on fundamentally
insecure?
It might
fall apart in our favor.
Okay, so anybody that thinks that the world is about to end, everything is technically still politics as usual.
Yeah, well, and what Cody just said was it was using...
I said they're built on systems that are, by their nature, insecure.
Well, it's built on a web frame or on a framework that, you know, allows you to take the code you write to make a website, and then it will build you an Android app or an iOS app. So you don't have to go through the trouble of learning the native code to write an Android app or an iOS app. So this thing, this technology that they just took a website, essentially, sort of technology, and translated into something people are using on an iPad or on their phones, and that thing that makes that translates the web code is known to be insecure. It already had been known to be flawed.
So one day we're all going to get to vote with our phones, huh?
Well, not after this.
Everyone's face just fell.
Everybody's just going to be like, paper trails, no more technology. Like, this is a test in the waters thing.
The problem's deeper than that.
We've known this for 20 years.
Yeah.
The problem's deeper than that.
I'm going to agree with him.
The technologies that the internet is built on, it's fundamentally
open and ready for abuse.
Yeah, exactly. It's not conducive to a secure platform on which to base the decisions where you decide how force is going to be used in our society.
It's a popularity contest. That's what the Iowa caucus is. It's determining who's most popular.
Mm-hmm. That's politics.
But when you're hiring somebody to do a job, we don't vote on who's most popular. We vote on who's most capable, but we don't vote on that, do we?
No, we don't.
So is the Iowa caucus even anything to talk about?
No, we're just talking about their failure of software.
About the technology,
just the software.
And it does go into a bit of, it can be abused, which ties into, the actual more political side of it. But that's,
It makes you wonder why we couldn't come up with some sort of system, say, based on simple objects that can't be ever connected to a computer or hacked, like, say, paper and a pen and a box and some people to count them.
Just go back to the old-fashioned, just, stuff, actual stuff in ballot boxes and, certain, get lost in the case.
Are we so strapped for cash that we can't pay people to, actually count ballots and make
honest?
Sure?
Can we pay people to be honest?
I mean, probably not.
Could always take the counter-argument that, any system is technically hackable. It's just amount of effort that you want to put into it.
He's got a point.
But the internet itself was a hack.
Yeah,
border gateway protocol is hackable. You get
a bunch of funding from people that don't know where to spend the money, and then you get a whole bunch of voting machines that don't work.
Yeah,
do you know how terrified I am when I walk up to a voting machine that's electronic?
Is it Diebold? Have you guys looked into Diebold?
Diebold.
Way back during the 2001 elections, 2008 elections, I forget.
They make ATMs too.
There you go.
That run on Windows 7.
Diebold was found to have certain software vulnerabilities. Yeah. But, Border Gateway Protocol, that was a hack. And then you have packets destined for, data packets from New York, destined for San Francisco, say, being routed all the way through a China server. So China can snarf up that data and then send it along to San Fran, even though really the shortest path would probably be through the
Midwest. Necessarily. If there's a lot of congestion in between, going all the way around the world could be faster.
All right, but there have been instances of falsely advertised, more than one. So there was one with China. There was one with Turkey.
Yeah.
Falsely advertised, routes where, the shortest path is through Turkey or the shortest path is through China.
It's
not true.
Some of that is nefarious in China's case, where you will have routes being advertised, and they're like, "Oh yeah, this is totally easier to do it because there's inappropriate configuration packets being leaked in the internet," and then they're just willing to take it, and then their equipment is willing to be like, "Okay, I'll talk to you."
But isn't SSL supposed to protect us from this sort of...
There was no verification built into Border Gateway Protocol.
I mean, Cody just hit the nail on the head. I mean, if you're advertising these packets and somebody else is like, yeah, this is great. You know, it doesn't matter if it's in the People's Republic of China or the DPRK. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll send it through you because, like, this is a great idea.
It was like the APA. Oh, no, the AP, Associated Press, sorry.
Yeah, I know.
It was designed for a network that has grown far beyond its reach. It was designed for...
Well, there's some kind of an implicit trust. Like it was, you know, small networks or just between...
If by small you mean only United States. Like ARPANET.
Right.
And that trust is what allows the network to work as quick as it does. Otherwise, you're going to go through lots of stages of verification and keys and codes and encryption.
I'm not sure that it would take that long.
For what?
I mean, it's a one-time thing, right? Just to verify that you're
Valid... Nope. Every time you send a packet or a stream of packets, it should require, you know...
Maybe.
If it fails the encryption, you can't do that.
You literally can't do that. I mean, like, the amount of data that you're forking through, like, a switch or any of these routers, I mean, it's terabits of stuff. I mean, you can't do it. So, I mean, like, in reality, if you have end-to-end encryption between yourself and, let's say, the server or wherever you're talking to, the other party on the other side, I mean, I think that that's a better solution. That way, somebody can't eavesdrop on what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why encryption is so important. And these wars about, you know, allowing things to be backdoored is so serious because, you know, you have these people that can just eavesdrop on what you're doing. And, you know, my banking shouldn't be public record. You know what I mean?
And the bottom line for that is even if it's the government giving the keys to eavesdrop, somebody else will one day figure out how to make a copy of that key and eavesdrop as well. And
yeah, the clipper chip or what was something like that. I forget. Oh, it was a Clinton era.
Clipper chip.
The clipper chip was essentially that. It was a hardware onboard decryptor that was supposed to be, you know, a secure enclave. And if you had the key for it, you could decrypt data on the device. It was already an attempt to do this, and it failed miserably.
Like many attempts at securing data do.
Yeah, well, the thing is encryption is just math, and there are provable algorithms. They're mathematically provable.
There's like always
the
somebody better at math than you.
The common person doesn't understand it, but they, you know, it's a politician just saying, well, there must be some way. Well, no, there isn't.
one day we hope they'll get it.
If you think about, like, that's sort of a similar problem to the Enigma machine is that, like, oh, well, why don't we... It's like, well, it's a mathematical, like, it's a statistical improbability that we'll find the code. Well, let's just build something that'll just use an algorithm, and then eventually we'll get there, and we'll get the code, like, every day. And it's sort of like the same thing. It's like, no, there's no way to ensure that something is going to be absolutely secure.
And then everybody's playing that game, and then the winners, whoever's got the stronger computer.
And add an 80 years of progress.
Yeah.
Every pipe will have its leak.
I mean, sort of. There was a point that I was gonna make. It was sort of about the problem of security. Is that, well, that I think when it comes to elections and technology, I think they should actually be entirely separate because people need to actually think that maybe their voice, or I mean, their vote actually. They need to have confidence in that, and they
the illusion
can't.
At least, and sometimes the old ways are better.
Yeah.
Without that confidence, the democracy is going to fall apart.
They can't do that if they're just like, well, maybe half my votes were just deleted because somebody just hacked the system and just changed everything. So, why did I leave the house?
Again, like, sounds like we're talking about politics as usual.
Break out the number two pencil in the bubble.
That's how you do it, baby. No, you're talking Scantrons. No. Okay, I just want to give a shout-out to one of our listeners, Stephanie in Ghent. Hello, Stephanie. How you doing? No questions asked, but at least we know some people are listening to us. We got one listener out there, guys. All right.
Just one. It's all for you.
All right, Cody, since you're talking, we're moving on to your bio break. What you got for us?
Oh.
What you got?
For our one listener. Who is a fan, definitely a fan of conspiracy theories. Right. It's to indulge you, the conspiracy head.
I'm sure we got a few of them, listener.
Yeah, exactly. With a little bit of material about the media's latest darling fear porn topic, the coronavirus.
Adjust your tinfoil hats 10 degrees east this transmission.
Did you know tinfoil hats actually amplify certain transmissions? Anyways. So this virus, let me introduce you to a concept. It's the same pig with a different lipstick. The same pig as the SARS virus and the Middle East respiratory virus.
They're all coronavirus.
That's right. And there's tons of them. It's easily spread through aerosolization, either by direct means in close contact with a carrier.
Sneezing.
Or coughing.
Or snotting.
Or contact with viral particles from settled droplets.
Don't let anybody cry on you.
Don't touch anything anybody sneezed on.
So standard Ebola protocol.
Yeah, right. So how did this appear, guys? Let me answer the question for you.
Asia?
Is it a mutation of something?
Interspecies relations, maybe?
The viral family of coronaviridae have many variants. There exist coronaviruses infecting poultry, lungs, cow and porcine, which is pork intestine, even cats, cat intestines. And the cat proves to be a great demonstration of the answer to the question. Feline coronavirus is capable of spontaneously mutating into a systemic form, which causes fluid accumulation around in the cat's chest cavity. So, peritonitis. Much worse than a case of GI tract irritation. The mutations that caused it to become as virulent as it has probably occurred in some form prior to the Wuhan frenzy. But Wuhan is a unique locale. It's a junction for the northern and western Chinese provinces, which is a transit hub for tens of millions. When millions are traveling for the Chinese New Year, as they have been recently, right around the time this popped up, it's only logical the virus is going to spread. At least it's not like influenza, where we have to consider that the vaccines only contain only a few strains, which might match your lottery pick. Influenza mutates so frequently that often that year's inoculation misses the mark entirely. With coronavirus, we have to think even harder. Obsessive hand washing, avoiding unnecessary contact with humans, especially in close quarters, as we are now. All sat around this round table.
I could feel it invading.
And a general distrust of media narratives will go a long way. Now, let me point out some interesting biology-related facts. Wuhan is the only city in China with a level 4 biohazard virology lab to public knowledge. Transmissible gastroenteritis coronavirus is known as a great virus to husk out its genome and duct tape new genes in its place. Tobacco mosaic virus is also considered a good transgenic vector. This nanomachine can reassemble itself when you take it apart. All of its proteins just, you take it apart, put itself back together again.
What would be a normal action for taking it apart? Are you talking like treating it with medicine?
I'm talking about treating it with any number of things. Maybe isopropyl, autoclaving.
Oh, so, like, you're talking about surface decontamination. Like, hitting it with bleach.
Tobacco mosaic?
Yeah. The one that can reassemble
itself. It's a self-assembling mechanism.
It sounds horrifying.
Yeah, and they also husked that one out to do transgenic GMO modification.
I purchase some?
Can you purchase some? Probably, yeah. Just go to, like, Novartis or some other biotech company like that.
Okay, so any budding evil geniuses out there, you have a source list to start with.
Another one to look into is cauliflower mosaic virus. That's another nice transgenic organism.
Awesome.
There you go. That's your bio break. Fear pouring away.
Okay, we're going to move on to Corey and the Forgotten Geeks history lesson.
Okay, February 1st, 1851, Gail Borden invented evaporated milk.
Yummy.
In 1951, NBC affiliate Kitla filmed the first TV broadcast of an atomic explosion. February 4th, 1951, Dr. M.S. Roberts performed the longest operation in medical history, taking over 4 days to remove an ovarian cyst, totaling at 300 pounds. 200 of that was liquid.
Holy crap.
Ooh. What?
Didn't drain it first?
Yeah, they drained it first. That's part of why it was like over 4 days.
I bet that was HPV, genital warts.
I think it was like, I can't remember. It was a woman, and like, yeah, she'd gotten up to like 600 pounds. So.
Poor woman.
February 9th, 1870, Congress authorized a new U.S. weather service, later named the Weather Bureau. February 13th, 1946, the first electronic digital computer, the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Calculator, or ENIAC, previously mentioned, was demonstrated by the University of Pennsylvania. It was the largest single electronic apparatus in the world at the time, comprised of 17,468 electronic vacuum tubes.
Mighty slow boot up time. You got to wait for those vacuum tubes to heat up.
will it run Windows 10?
Can you play Crysis on it?
Yeah.
No, but you can play Tetris.
2 kilobytes.
2 kilobytes?
Minesweeper.
I don't even think that's that much.
You can't even run Leather Goddesses of Phobos on that. Thank you for getting that.
It's only got 17,000 electronic tubes.
It's not that much memory.
I didn't get the memory specs. February 16th, 1923, in Thebes, Egypt, Howard Carter opened the sealed doorway to the sepulchral chamber of King Tutankhamun's tomb. Almost a week later, the Belgian queen and the press attended the official opening. No word underneath curses were handed out.
So, did anybody die after that?
I know. How many viruses were released?
Exactly!
Well, that's what I've been worried about with the Arctic defrosting.
Or just fungi.
Hey, staff can live on space equipment living on the moon.
There's dead people down there.
1948, NBC began a tobacco-sponsored broadcast of 20th Century Fox's Movie Tone News, making it the first daily news telecast in the U.S. 1968, over 10 years after a suggestion by the National Fire Chiefs Association that a universal emergency services telephone number be established, the first system to use 911 was inaugurated in Alabama. AT&T came up with the number. February 17th, a six-game series of chess matches in Philadelphia concluded with world champion Garry Kasparov defeating IBM's chess-playing computer Deep Blue 4-2.
And now they can play Go.
and kick your butt at Jeopardy. Butt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1930, a three-decade search for Planet X initiated by Percival Lowell concluded when Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto after noticing a starry speck that changed position on two plates taken 6 days apart.
Planet X was supposed to be, at that point, the 10th planet in our solar system.
And now Pluto is not a planet anymore.
So now that planet would be Planet 9, and that planet is still speculated to be in existence, and there is some slight evidence for it.
Like what?
Gravitational pulls on different objects in the Kuiper Belt.
Oh. Okay.
So it's going to be out there?
That's way
if it's out there.
And speaking of conspiracy, why don't we just go ahead and name it Nemesis just to mess with
yes.
it?
Yes.
Nibiru.
Oh, yeah. February 20th, 1962, John Glenn made the first U.S. manned orbit, piloting the spacecraft Friendship 7, making 3 orbits in 5 hours. The residents of Perth, Australia, greeted him by switching on their house lights in unison.
You think you saw that from space?
Yeah, I think he was able to.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Cool.
February 21st, 1858, Edwin T. Holmes installed the first electrical burglar alarm in Boston. February 23rd, 1954.
It's electrified bars. You just get zapped when you